What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Defocus Media Podcast. Today, we are going all in on surgery in eye care. And, you know, that's one of the new frontiers within the optometry profession. Are we going to be able to expand our scope to include surgical techniques in multiple states? We have a few already that can do it. And to pioneer those opportunities, we need doctors that are really capable surgeons to educate the rest of us. So I have someone who definitely qualifies as such on the show with me today. Please welcome to the show, Dr. Catherine Dronka.
Hey, everyone.
So tell us about yourself and your background in your optometric career so far.
So I kind of bring it way back. So I was actually born in Puerto Rico to two military parents, and we ended up kind of moving around a little bit and settling in Texas. And so I actually grew up in a teeny tiny town called Sealy, Texas. When I finally graduated high school, I moved to Waco, Texas, and did my Bachelor of Science in Neuroscience. I left from there in 2010 and went over to Houston. I worked for a private practice for about 2 years before I went to optometry school in Puerto Rico. I graduated there in 2012. I ended up moving to Detroit to do a residency in ocular disease and primary eye care at the John D. Dingell VA Hospital. I absolutely loved my residency. I ended up kind of precepting about 5 to 7 students. I did fluorescein angiographies. I did a weekly roundtable discussion. I got to see all kinds of really, really neat pathology and work with a lot of amazing clinicians and doctors. So that was really exciting. I also moonlighted on the weekends to kind of apply everything that I learned during residency kind of in a different setting. So that was really also pretty exciting. One Saturday morning, I ended up waking up to an email from one of my favorite professors and mentors from Puerto Rico. Her name was Dra. Myra Rian, and she, in this email, stated that this fellowship would be kind of an amazing opportunity for me. And I went ahead and looked into it. I applied. I went for my orientation, and then I started this past July. So it's been kind of a neat experience in general. Optometry has definitely been an amazing fit for me, and I don't think that any other really career would have been as rewarding.
So let's talk about this surgical fellowship, because this is brand new. Until, you know, you and I started talking about this, I had never heard that there was even a surgical fellowship available in optometry. So let's give everyone that's listening a background on the Rosenbrook School of Optometry Surgical Fellowship Program.
Absolutely. I had obviously never heard about it either, besides that one email, and everyone who kind of interviewed me were surprised that, you know, because I had been residency trained, and it was really going out to really the potential people who hadn't either matched with residency or who were interested in doing a different route. And so basically it drew me because it's something that is new. It's something that is definitely on the forefront of our profession. The fellowship is actually not in San Antonio at the school. It's actually in a small town called Carthage, Texas. And so I actually work with Dr. Dennis Golden at Golden Eye Associates, and we see kind of a vast majority of different things, primarily pathology, really. So we're probably about 70% pathology, 30% refraction. Basically what we do is we see all of our patients kind of in-house. We take any of those patients that need any type of surgery, you know, be it glaucoma surgery or secondary cataract, lump and bump removal, and we schedule them at our center in Louisiana. And that's the DeSoto Regional Eye Institute. And it's in another small town. I mentioned a lot of East Texas is small towns. So it's in Logansport, Louisiana. And so what we do is we actually perform SLTs, YAG, capsulotomies, LPIs in our laser room. And then we also have a periocular room where we do chalazion removals, removal of lesions, biopsies, basically anything like that. We also teach the in-house students. I have usually anywhere from 1 to 2 in-house students that kind of do their rotation with me. And then I also work with about 2 to 4 externs who come from Rosenberg that drive the, you know, 6+ hours to come see me. And then I actually teach them surgery while they're there. So they actually get to dive in and perform surgeries while I usually oversee with the teaching tube. And then they also do any of the, not necessarily in the incisions, but definitely get to kind of dive in and help me with some of the periocular surgeries as well. And so I think it's important, specifically teaching the students, that we can take out that kind of stigma of the scary word of surgery and teaching them that it's absolutely something that's obtainable.
Question for you. Did you learn those surgical techniques prior to your fellowship? Is this something that you were doing in optometry school or during your residency?
So in Puerto Rico, pretty much our scope of practice is very poor, unfortunately, and we can basically only really do kind of artificial tears and things like that. And so we didn't really do any of the surgeries. However, we did learn about lasers and the surgeries, you know, through classes, but nothing ever where we got to do anything kind of wet lab or hands-on. I actually learned by doing the advanced procedures course in Oklahoma. Literally on my drive from Detroit to Texas, I stopped in Oklahoma for those couple days and did the training. And so that's really where I learned how to do the procedures. And then when I got to Texas, I started doing them in Louisiana, kind of with the oversight of Dr. Golden. And that was it. So that really is my hands-on training. But because the procedures are so straightforward, you pick up very quickly, even the students, you know, doing one or two, when you go in and you feel very confident doing them.
I've also done that advanced procedures course taught by the Oklahoma School of Optometry. And it is incredible how these procedures can seem on paper like something that we haven't had the training for. But then once you get in there, you realize you're using your same skill sets, just like you described. You're doing gonioscopy, you're doing a slit length exam. The procedures are just an additive to our basic training in using a slit lamp in general here. So it is very rewarding to be able to see you can do so much with the training that you already have.
Exactly.
I guess what I'm really fascinated by in hearing your story is you did your residency at this VA hospital. Many people think by that time that you're finished with all that, like, gosh, yeah, I'm so ready to practice, right? You've had this fifth year basically of an educational track. And then you decided, I want to do a sixth year and really expand my horizons even more. Was that a difficult decision for you personally, or did you know, like, this is something I need in my career?
I think it was not a difficult decision for me. I absolutely love to learn and love to grow, and I'm always finding different ways to either do CEs or, you know, online training or just things, because I think it's important to grow not only as a person, but as a doctor and as a clinician. And so by having this additional opportunity to not only continue to grow my pathology skills, because that's really my main interest is disease, but then also adding in the ability to then treat with surgery, it was kind of a no-brainer for me. It's also, I think, important to help expand the scope of practice. And by being kind of on the forefront of doing a surgical fellowship, I mean, what better way than having something kind of set in stone that we actually have a program that allows us to continue to train. So I think it's important kind of all the way around to do this. So
one of the other things that comes up, I mean, I'm practicing in North Carolina, and we are trying to expand our scope to include these procedures. But one of the kind of naysaying things that we'll often hear, even amongst our own colleagues, is how often would I really even be doing these procedures? Well, you're doing them. So tell me, how often or how frequently are you getting to perform these procedures in your clinic?
I mean, we perform a tremendous amount. We typically go anywhere from 2 to 3 times a month to do these procedures. We could probably do more, but the way that we have it set up right now is because we have those externs coming from Rosenberg, that we try to at least get a good solid amount on the schedule so that way everyone who comes can have the ability to at least practice, you know, some type of surgery. Easily, since I've started, I've done anywhere from probably 200 plus laser procedures and, you know, at least 100, 200 lump and bump removal and biopsies. And so that in and of itself, you know, I'm only in what, month 8? So, I mean, there's your answer. You will have a tremendous amount of ability, especially if your clinic needs that. Since we're in such a rural, small town, I mean, we have a lot of disease and we have the ability to do that. And because they are so straightforward, there's really no reason why we shouldn't be able to just say, hey, let's just take you over to the next room. You know, that vision's kind of poor. Everything else in the back of the eye looks great. Macula is healthy. Let's go ahead and just clean off that secondary cataract for you. And then not only one, you know, have you just kept it in-house, that makes the patients more comfortable. Two, you provided a service that allows them to see better again. It's really something that I think is necessary for our profession.
Tell me a little bit about a day in life, because you're painting this picture. You are doing a lot of these procedures, but like you said, you have student externs kind of cycling through that you're mentoring and kind of demonstrating these procedures with and letting them take their opportunity to learn straight from you. And then, of course, you're also probably doing some primary care since your schedule can't be entirely full of these procedures only. What is the kind of breakdown of a regular day for you, would you say?
The great thing about this location is that there is a tremendous amount of variety. So we see pretty much, I would say, about 60 patients a day, more or less, you know, sometimes more, sometimes less, just depending on the day. Again, I oversee the in-house students, so I'm working with them as well. It can go anywhere from, you know, just kind of a handful of your regular just refractive error contact lens exams, or placement of amniotic membranes, your bandaged contact lenses, removal of foreign bodies. I order a lot of lab work and neuroimaging, so obviously I'm assessing a lot of that. We actually do some genetic and some blood testing for different autoimmune diseases and for the patients, you know, with family history of macular degeneration. We have a lot of ancillary testing, such as like our OCT, visual field, B-scan, retinal imaging, our specular microscopy. So we're really performing quite a few of those throughout the day. I mean, honestly, the list goes on and on from the things that I get to see in office each day. But the other additional cool thing, I think, in my personal opinion, is that I also get to be on call, which is really neat to kind of see patients outside of your typical work setting, since those are the ones that come, you know, with scleritis or the extreme foreign body or the orbital fracture, all of which I've had in the past couple weeks. So pretty neat to actually be able to see those kind of things. I also do occasional house calls and hospice care and then nursing home calls as well. And then the ones to the ER that when they need me to assess something, you know, immediately, I'm just, you know, a hop away from the ER. So I get to really see a lot of different aspects of our, I guess, what optometry has to offer, from refraction all the way to, you know, these intense traumas and your rare scleritis and things like that. So it's definitely pretty rewarding.
So you have this really unique training. I mean, you're the first surgical fellow in optometry. What is next for you with this background that you've developed?
You know, after really teaching students for the past 2 years, I realized that I actually really, really love to teach. I never really imagined myself teaching until I did it. And so I realized that teaching is definitely something that I wanted to do. And I actually just signed a contract to be a professor of surgery, amongst other classes, at the new school in Kentucky. So that job starts for me on July 1st. So I'm extremely excited and honored that I get to be a part of a new school and helping to grow the school to be something great, and that I get to practice the same way that I get to practice here in Kentucky, since we have the same, you know, set of laws as Louisiana. I get to continue to do the surgeries, continue to teach the surgeries. And so it's definitely something that I'm really looking forward to.
Well, since you're talking about, I mean, this has really launched a completely different career track that, I mean, without this kind of position, you would never have really been able to see this is something that you're passionate about. I know that your program is about to end. What if someone's listening and they want to potentially apply or be a candidate for next year's round, how can they go about doing that?
The cool thing is they're actually still receiving applications. And so the deadline isn't due just yet. I believe the deadline is April 1st. So you still have some time. You can actually contact Dr. Kyle Sandberg, and his email is ksandberg, which is ksandberg@uiwtx.edu. And you can email him to kind of ask about the program to receive an application. You can also check out more information online through the UIW website. If you just go to their academics and then their residencies tab, that kind of goes into the program as well, kind of on paper versus, you know, hearing what I had to say. But that's kind of how you would go about doing it. You can also talk to Kyle about talking to me personally, and I would love to give you any other additional information that you wanted to hear or listen to. But it's definitely an amazing opportunity, and I would do it again in a heartbeat. And I definitely suggest that people do it, especially as we continue to expand our scope of practice.
Well, besides getting this additional training, I mean, do you have anything that you think is essential to us expanding surgical scope of practice in the rest of, you know, the 50 states that don't have it?
I think not only having something in place now, aka this fellowship, but I think having the schools continue to teach it, and even in the states that can't practice, to have, you know, wet labs and like a standardized kind of training across the board, you know, having, you know, Rich Castillo and the people from Oklahoma come and teach these courses to the schools to kind of help do that. Because I think one of the main criticisms we have is that, oh, well, it's not uniform, you know, well, you learn surgery, but you don't, you know, how are you qualified? And so I think by having kind of across the board, kind of a standardized teaching or the ability for each student to do, you know, a wet lab and things like that, I think that would definitely make a huge difference as we come forward to continue to try to expand.
That definitely makes sense. And having these educational programs in multiple schools and expanding that scope sounds like a great place to start. So I appreciate all the effort that you put in personally. You're devoting your career to the scope expansion, really, as you take this next position. And hopefully we keep seeing state legislations change. I know in North Carolina, we're going to continue to pursue this. I know a lot of other states are interested in doing it too, but trying to help maintain optometry as our primary eye care provider, as the techniques and surgical skills improve to offer our patients, we need to make sure we're improving what we can offer our patients at the same time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's definitely important to have this kind of consistent education. And I'm really excited to be kind of part of this expansion. Again, never really, I guess, seeing myself doing it until I started doing it and realizing like, yeah, you know what? Now that I'm doing surgery, I want, you know, everyone to have the ability to do surgery. Not everyone wants to do surgery, and that's perfectly fine. Even in the realm of, you know, MDs and DOs, you know, some people do surgery, some people don't, but at least having the ability to do that for the people who want to be able to take that to the next level to treat their patients, I think is incredibly important.
Dr. Drunga, if anyone's listening to this podcast and wants to reach out specifically to you for mentorship or guidance, what's a great way for them to get in touch with you?
Absolutely. They can reach me at my email. It's drkat@outlook.com. So basically Dr. Kat. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, you know, any comments, any mentoring, anything that you'd like. I always give out my, you know, my email to all my students. So that way, you know, down the road, they can contact me and I still get, you know, emails with, hey, what does this OCT look like? You know, what do you think this is? And so I'm definitely all game for doing any of that. So please contact me. I would love to hear from you.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.